The healthcare system is broken, but it doesn't have to be. This is Revenue Cycle Optimized by Infinix Healthcare. We discuss the latest challenges in the revenue cycle space and provide actionable tips on how to overcome them at your organization.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to welcome everyone to another episode of Office Hours. My name is Stuart Newsom, Vice President of Marketing here at Infinix. I'm actually joined by our Chief Strategy Officer, Chuck Rackley, who's one of our leading experts and subject matter experts in the subject of denials management. So just want to kick things off. We're actually discussing today, believe it or not, which is probably the bane of everyone's existence, those remittance advice notices and how to handle those, commonly known as CARTs and RARCs, with those denial codes that are associated with those. I know it's been a big issue among a lot of denial management administrators, practice management administrators. Anyone that's had to deal with a denial just knows from experience that dealing with these denial codes can be a real pain in the neck. And it's no surprise. They're really, when you look at the denials management process, you receive that admittance advice notice. You had to correlate that CARC and RARC on those claims to determine, well, what can I appeal? What adjustments can I make? What corrections and resubmissions have to do? I have to get down to the root cause and then consider some write-offs. And if you listen to last week's episode, I discussed some of the hidden cost of reworking a claim in there. And that's part of the factor. This is what I was talking about during that episode, but wanted to expand on it in this episode. And that's been my experience, Chuck. I don't know if you can add anything to that, what you've seen out there in the environment and what people are dealing with.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest issue that I see, Stuart, is just quantifying the problem in general, understanding what's real, what's fake, what's a hard denial, what's a soft denial. And I tell you, a lot of people struggle with the nomenclature itself on exactly how to even think about what they're seeing on these remittance advices. So a common issue that we see is a good example is the request for additional information denials that we see come in. Some people will fight you until they're blue in the face that that's a real denial. And I've had arguments the other way. So I feel like if I was running a debate team, I could argue it for either side, but some people will really struggle identifying what's a real denial and how to correlate that into their performance. That's probably the biggest issue I see.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because a denial is not always a denial. You may have something that is just a return to the provider. And to your point, I believe like the CO16 is maybe something you're referring to, where most people don't count that as a denial. I wouldn't, because they're asking for additional information. They haven't really read it yet. They're just telling you, hey, we need to take a deeper look at this. So they may roll that into their denial management metrics. It's going to be a false positive. So I definitely get that. So that's an excellent point.
I almost think about it, an 835 is not so much these are your denials. It's more about these are your responses. So it's like if you ask your parents to go to the movie theater, go ask your dad is a kind of a request for different information rather than a flat out denial.
That's right.
So there's a lot of different sections in that. And some of them are just informational only, where they're actually paying it, but they're telling you something else. So instead of thinking as the whole 835 as a denial remit, think of it more like a response remit.
Oh, absolutely. And I like to coin the phrase denial ease. I kind of came up with that, the language. I even came up with a phrase called coding ease, because payers use codes, CPT, diagnosis codes, modifiers, in order to understand what's going on with an encounter. Well, likewise, the payers are sending back to the providers codes that tell them this is what I need. Either it is denied or it is rejected, or I need additional information. And those reason codes are to articulate that. And in a way, I like to take a step back, because you mentioned earlier kind of knowing, understanding the terminology, understanding the messaging coming back. Just wanted to define, you know, what is CARCs and what is RARCs? And I bring this up because I know we make big assumptions sometimes. And the assumption is that the denials management world knows what we're talking about when we say CARCs and RARCs, especially with my Southern accent. Sometimes I can draw it out a little bit. And you can actually go to HIPAA, or actually HIPAA has dictated this to x12.org. You go to x12.org, you can see all the definitions of these CARCs and RARCs. But essentially, they're reason codes, they're denial codes, they're remittance codes. And you look at the CARC, that's just claim adjustment reason code. it's just a group of codes that could be starting off with two letters, and then it's ended up with two numbers. You may have a CO, you may have a PR, which is patient responsibility. CO means contractual obligation. OA is other adjustment. So the list goes on and on. The RARCs, on the other hand, are additional information, remittance advice for MARC codes. That's just additional information that needs to be added to the CARC. So I think of it this way, there are some CARCs that can stand alone, but RARCs can never stand alone. So CARCs may need RARCs, but RARCs will always need CARCs. So just kind of given the lay of the land there of what these are and what they actually mean, you look up, go to x12.org and look up those definitions, and they are standardized. Every payer is mandated to use these codes. But here's the catch, and I want to get your take on this too, Chuck, if you can. It just seems, and I know that they can use it however they want. So that's why they're, a lot of times they're very ambiguous. So you'll notice that there's no standardization that it means the same thing across payers. Even though it was designed like that, and I think the mandate missed the pitch a little bit, took a strike at this when it just didn't realize that these payers were going to take liberties to define what that CARC means for their organization and in their plans.
Yeah, for sure. And we see that even regionally different inside of payers. So like payers like United, Blue Cross that have a lot of different subsections of their payer. I think as many people think payers are all very well organized, anyone who's ever worked for a payer can tell you it's anything but that. And most payers can't even tell you how their reimbursement tables work, much less their remark codes back to the individual providers. So you can even see differences if your organization has several different locations across the country. Even inside payers, they might be different on how to work individual CARCs and RARCs. So it is a huge issue, like you said, to really get down to specifics and have SOPs on each set. And that unfortunately, there's no rule book for this. There's nothing online that says for a Blue Cross in Illinois, work it this way versus one in Georgia. This is something that you just kind of have to get through the hard way and figure out how to work this on each individual in case.
Right, exactly. And that's why it's so important to stay up to speed on those policies and on those changes, because they'll change what they mean by these. And you'll have to just stay up to speed, look at your payer mix, and make sure you're diligent in looking at those policies, or doing the research, do your homework. It's going to take a lot of time, but if you do this ahead of time instead of in the moment, that's some of the things I suggest is be sure you set a cadence of when you're checking all of these policies out and see what these, if there's any change to those CARCs and RARCs that they have and what they, how they define them. Because if you wait till in the moment, then that's just going to delay payment even further. There's more revenue that you're losing in the cost to rework those claims. And it can add up really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We've been stating a little bit some of the issues that are with the denials process. Can you discuss what RCM professionals are facing, of some of the main issues that they have?
Sure. Yeah, I'll tell you, even some of the larger organizations we do business with, the technology issues continues to plague even the most seasoned professionals on how to do this. It really comes down to a couple different things on how you're getting these remittance advices kind of distilled. 15 years ago, a boss of mine showed me this very complicated Monarch model, and it kind of distilled this down into Excel, into Access, and had to spit it out three different ways. And that was pretty arduous. And in some companies still are working in that way, where they're having to download these massive files into, you know, databases and kind of do it themselves to try to get any kind of information out of it. I feel it's terrible to have that. It's almost impossible to make any kind of real-time assumption on what's happening there, even near-time assumption. There's a different flavor of that, where some people are looking at their CARCs and RARCs through their clearinghouse. That's probably the most common way we see it happen, where they're having some sort of ERA manipulation happening and they're giving them some reporting. And then sometimes it's in the EMRs. So you see some EMRs have an ingestion engine here where they can work with the clearinghouses or the billing scrubbers to get some of that information in there. So some of the bigger ones like Cerner and Epic, even Meditech, have some of this capability. But what really separates the pros from the amateurs here is the ability to, you know, really take that from massive data and turn it into information. That's where really people struggle. And then what to do with it after that. So it's not hard to see that there's a denial code on this one. What gets hard for people is when there's multiple denials. That happens all the time, where you can have multiple denials on one CPT.
Right.
On you multiple, especially if it's an inpatient account, you can have several denials. It's stack ranking those in order of importance. How do we work those? And then to a better question, how do we stop that from happening?
Right.
Most people are behind the eight ball from a technology perspective already. And that's before you even start talking about their processes and procedures. So most people, like we talked about before, are extremely reactive. They're working things just as they come in. And sometimes it's even a situation where they don't even know that a denial is on the account until they start to follow up on it. I can't tell you how many times we've seen AR units that their procedure is to go on the portal or call in to the insurance company to check status and just to find out there's a denial and then have to throw it in some other workflow. Especially if you're not working from the same place, that just slows everything down and it slows down your reimbursement over time. So the best way we've seen this done is to have some sort of workflow engine that can know that these accounts are in a denial status before it has to be followed up on and have a specialized person work those and then kind of work backwards from there.
Right, right. And then you throw in there the staff shortages.
Oh, yeah.
They were still feeling the effects of the Great Resignation. I mean, COVID was what, 4 years ago? Mm-hmm. And we're still short-staffed. And then even when we weren't short-staffed, I'd saw issues where there seemed to be one or two people that just knew everything. They had that muscle memory on how to work these denials. And then when they went on vacation or had to be out sick, then everything just seemed to shut down. And you just can't have that. There just needs to be, again, it speaks back to processes and procedures on, you know, cross-training and also having the right tools in place. I'm a firm believer that technology has advanced enough with AI, automation, machine learning, where it can remedy some of the staff shortages where the existing staff can work smarter and not necessarily harder. I know cliches, I'm not a big cliche person, but that's definitely an adage that you can apply here.
For sure. And I think one silver lining to this problem is that whenever there's big issues like this, it usually is a catalyst for us to innovate as an organization, as a market, as an industry. And one of the things that everyone likes to say these days is the AI, RPA, ML, you know, all these things that, you know, you hear at all the conferences that, you know, everybody can do. This area right here in denials is probably the best use case that I've seen actually work. You know, a lot of people try to tell you about, you know, this is going to be completely automated process. And most of the time it doesn't work. But in denials, there are a few use cases that make a ton of sense for RPA specifically.
Right.
The one I'm thinking about is the one we started talking about, the CO16, additional information requests, medical record requests, things like that. What we've seen really work well in those situations is bots that can actually, you know, read a portal, go out there and see what was requested, like if it's an op note or, you know, discharge summary, anything like that, and actually pull it and resubmit the claim back to the payer. I've seen this happen where we can actually automate that entire process from the queue through the portal, through Availity, through Carrion, whichever one, and actually take the human completely out of it. So the good news about that is that we're starting to see a lot more bots like that as a result of all these CARCs that are coming in. Now that comes with a whole lot of other problems too, Stuart, but it's good to see that we're starting to make some big strides there for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. So it sounds like even these bots could even identify the root cause.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's not, I wouldn't say the bot's doing that. The bot's really just kind of taken some menial work out of our bank. Now, machine learning can actually do that. So, but the machine learning is going to have some more information to do that. So it's going to have, you know, a much longer history of what's happened there, what the actual results were. So to say for a whole year of time for this specific CARC, was it paid? Was it not paid? Was it overturned? Here was the root cause for it. And that we are starting to see some results for. But what we're actually using that for, which is interesting, it's not so much root cause analysis we're using that for. It's workforce prioritization. So which denials we want to work first, because these are the ones I can actually get overturned versus these are the ones that I have no shot at and I don't want to waste my time.
Right.
So that So where, you know, root cause is definitely a part of it. The machine learning and that part of it really comes into how do I work these accounts?
Right, right. That makes total sense. And it seems over years, I've been doing this for a very, very long time. I think you have been doing this a long time as well. And it seems I see the top denials every year consistently come across, like patient authorization, patient eligibility, even provider eligibility. There's always coding errors, the same old coding errors, misuse of modifiers. I mean, I just attended a virtual conference the last couple of days, and modifier 25, people were still asking about modifier 25.
Mm-hmm.
Timely filing, you know, coverage of policies. These always seem to be the top. And I keep telling myself, when are we going to wake up and solve the problem for all this? You know, with prior authorization, with eligibility, appropriate use of modifiers, medical necessity is a huge thing. I mean, we can do a whole session on medical necessity, and
sure.
And that term itself is very ambiguous. It means different things to different people. But what are some of the top denials that you see, and then how basically we have processes in place to assist with that?
You mentioned several of the most common offenders, prior auth, MedNest, coding denials probably being the most. The other one that jumps out to me a ton is duplication. So duplicate claims filed. That one's kind of irritating that happens. And a lot of this stuff, like you mentioned, happening on the front end of the rev cycle is preventable. So when we start to look at, you know, really what's preventable versus non-controllable, the weight is way down on preventable. There's not much happening here. So when you finally get to the point where most of your denials are not preventable, then you know you're doing a good job. But I haven't seen a shop yet that was clean. Some other ones that, you know, we talked about, you know, attachments missing or just kind of weird stuff where stuff happens after termination or, you know, modifier issues, non-covered is a big one, comes out there for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things when you want to consider, you know, when you're trying to correct some of your denials issues and looking at these denials is obviously we've talked about identifying root cause and how important that is, but it's also about scalability, that bring it to scale. Because again, it kind of speaks back to the staffing shortage. It's just one example. There's other examples of scalability, but you just want to make sure that it can be mass produced across the entire organization, especially if you're a large organization.
Right.
And I know everyone likes to work in silos and everyone likes to put their payers in silos because you may have one person who's just the Blue Cross expert, another person is the Medicare expert. And so make your processes and procedures very scalable and it can apply across the board. And then setting that as standards. Another issue is reportable analytics, how analytics really plays a part of this. And everyone, I know when I hear analytics, you just think, oh, it's just the basic stuff, you know. How much can you improve on with analytics? But I always wanted to see if you could speak a little bit more to the power of analytics when they're done right.
Yeah, I will. But real quick before you reminded me of something just now when you're talking about those silos, just if you don't mind, right before we go into analytics.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's back up.
So the kind of a byproduct of specialization, not a good byproduct, but a bad one, is that when we become so specialized, especially in the back end, where we're just focused on one process or another instead of kind of a across the board process, and then having different ownerships from patient access, coding, and billing and collection and denials management, that's where we see a lot of communication breakdown over time. The most common one we see is that there's usually a CFO or COO, and they have reporting to them a back office leader and a front office leader. And inevitably what happens here is that the denials start coming in, CFO knocks on the rev cycle back-end leader's door and says, hey, what the heck? Why are denials through the roof? And 9 times out of 10, they're going to point to the other office and say, well, they can't get it together.
Right.
It's usually what happens, and it's very indicative of, you know, lack of clear communication between those departments and coordination of what's happening from an analytics perspective.
Right.
So definitely one of the big remedies that we see and we usually recommend is, it's not rocket science, Stuart. It's, you know, a denial committee, if you will. So what we've seen be extremely successful is, you know, just having a forum where everyone sits down at a table to solve a problem rather than start to point fingers. Look at analytics from a very objective point of view. Hey, here's the denials that are coming in. Let's do some root cause analysis together and do some process improvement. And it's much easier to fix this stuff from the front office than the back office. Even if you have an overturn rate that, you know, is 99%, to use your words from last week, it's a hidden factory. It's just part of the machine that slows everything down. It's definitely a killer of cost to collect and a balance sheet improvement. So definitely something to think about if you don't have a denial committee set up between your front office and back office leaders. That's something I would definitely set up.
Right.
And when we talk about analytics, it's important to come at that from a place that everyone can kind of agree on facts. In our world today, be it, you know, something complicated like politics or very, very objective like sports, that's not objective at all, but agreeing on one set of facts that we're going to go from is very important. And that's where analytics comes in. So to make sure everyone's reading from the same hymnal, knows exactly what the score is, cannot be overstated the importance of that. So if you don't mind, I actually have a demo environment from one of our analytics tools I can show. Do you mind, Stuart?
Well, I'd go right ahead. Share your screen. That'd be awesome.
Perfect. So this is a demo environment. This isn't real data or anything, but I wanted to kind of show you a couple of things we talked about already today that are really illustrated here well. So this is our product called ARDM. I'm sure you've seen it. This is our accounts receivable denials management tool. This is one of the products that have a lot of analytics and dashboarding and reports that can be built. And this is kind of a standard look at a remittance advices and what we call our initial denial rate. So, you know, there's a couple ways to look at that. We look at that. And this is like we talked about a second ago, reading from the same hymnal. Let's define what a few of those things are. So believe it or not, I've been in organizations where one person's talking about denial rate as a number, as a percent of the actual number of claims, and the other person's talking about dollar, and you see how they can change over
time. All right.
And switch places on which one is better or worse. So it's important to get on the same page on exactly what we're talking about here for these metrics. Cannot be overstated how important that is. The other thing to keep in mind is, when you talk about denial rate, initial denial rate, what time period and over what kind of accounting period are we looking at? So there's two ways to do this. The first way is the way I have it here. So these dates across the bottom are by the actual remittance date those came in. So regardless of what date of service these patients had, everything that happened that was remitted during June is going to show up here. The other way to do that is by date of service. And the numbers vary here wildly, specifically because you get a lot of remittance advice from old accounts, especially if you're doing rebills. You get a lot of remittance advice from 3-4 months ago. So a lot of times when people look at this kind of denial trend and they see, okay, there's a huge uptick, whatever we did didn't work, it's not necessarily true. Some of these things that are coming in here may be from wildly different dates of service. So it's really, really important to look at it from both angles when you're
looking exactly at
the date of service rather than just claim submission date. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And especially if you're, you know, taking on a big project and you finally want to clean up some of your aged accounts that are, say, 90 or even 120 days. And if you may have an influx, like on this graph here, where you're looking at the remittance date, then you'll have an influx of collections probably that will skew the data. So it's really good to look at the data service to get a reality check where that is.
The other thing that we talked about earlier is starting to group your denials in a way that makes sense. So I don't remember how many CARCs are there, Stuart? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh gosh. I can't either. And there's some that are deleted. It depends on each year. They retire with some, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You may get a product that's been retired, not in use anymore, but the payer's still using it.
Sure. So if you were trying to make a chart like this, where you really want to get this down to big groupings, this chart would look crazy if you had every single denial code in there.
Oh, yeah.
One of the first steps we do is start to group these together in big chunks. So like, for example, if we wanted to do information needed, so if we wanted to look at these three groups, you're going to have a lot of different denial codes that flow into that group. So it's going to be one-to-one is not the right way to look at this. It's much better to look at this where you're several into-one, to almost like a grouper, to start to really get down and get in some specific information.
Right.
So here's where we were talking about earlier, where you know, the way I look at this may not be the same way you look at this, may not be the same way anybody listening looks at this. So to get these groups perfect is never going to happen, but at least to get on the same page is a huge part of this battle.
Right.
So like, and I've seen people, this is a demo environment, but there's other examples that we look at when we manage our AR and denials, where we'll have another selector that'll say, you know, preventative, not preventative. We'll have some that'll say clinical or technical, or, you know, we can follow up on this now, or this is dead, or a lot of different selectors you can add to this just to kind of give you a couple different more looks at how to look at this denial information. When I scroll down here, you start to look at these groups and then to see what actually flows in from there. So, you know, if we look at these groups in here, you can start to see, like I talked about, here's all the CARCs and RARCs that throw themselves into coding. And then what's interesting about that is when you kind of do there, then you can start to see the payers that it's specifically going after, mm-hmm. or the locations, or the doctor, or the CPT code that's attached to it. So rather than just kind of looking at everything in one way, it's good to have this kind of step down approach from what I would call macro here. Say, okay, this month's a problem. This was the biggest section. You know, I really want to look at United specifically for this location, for that CPT, and here are my accounts that tie up to that. That what I just did right there, that's faster than 95% of what people can do to get down to here's the things that are coming in from a diagnostic perspective on remittance advices.
Yeah, it's much faster than messing with a spreadsheet. And sometimes you have to wait days on some of the data to get here.
Oh yeah. And you know, that's the real advantage of this tool for me, because when I'm managing our big enterprise clients, the advantage of this tool for me here is, you know, if I get a question from some of our leaders as client partners, you know, something that would usually take 2 weeks for them to figure out, I can figure out in a matter of seconds and say, hey, Chuck, what happened in denials this month? We really, really took it. I can get down to really specific information for them very quickly. In most cases, I can make this self-serve for them so they can actually get it themselves, which is also a game changer.
Right. That's awesome.
What else did you want to know from an analytics perspective? Did that cover everything you wanted to see?
Yeah, I think that covers everything. We just wanted to kind of look at, you know, analytics. I think a lot of people's eyes is glaze over when they think of analytics, unless you're just an analytic nerd like I am. I think you are as well. I just love looking at analytics. But then you got to have the analytics has to have a purpose. And you've actually right. articulated, you know, that yes, there's intent here. But that was excellent. And so, yeah, it definitely does articulate why analytics are so important. We've discussed how setting standards are extremely important as well. And then you discussed, you know, the prioritization of making sure that the right claim denial is being worked at the right time, and how that is just a better workflow for clients. Because a lot of them just, they're still, again, this same conference, one of the takeaways they had is, you know, first of all, look at your aging. Second of all, look at your biggest dollar amounts and who are your biggest payers. And that was how they were disseminating that. And I believe that there is a better approach by, again, using AI to kind of look at a predictive analysis of, and again, you're going to need a lot of data from what I understand to substantiate this, but look at that predictability of which ones you're going to get paid more. What's the percentage of getting paid? So you may have a claim that's lesser in dollar value, but you have a 95% chance of recovering it. Then another claim that's higher in dollar value that may have a 50% chance of getting paid. And to me, that's just smart.
Sure.
Yep. So I don't know if you had any more take on that, but definitely a huge leg up for those who are struggling, especially of a small staff that can only work a finite number of claims in any given day. Because we're all given 24 hours, the same 24 hours each day. You know, it's just how you use it.
No doubt. I guess my final thought here, Stuart, would be, so while what I showed a second ago, that's a portion of the universe of denial analytics. It's important to remember there's a lot more to that. So what we looked at just now, that's initial. That's the first part of the battle. There's also what's sitting on your AR, like you said, that's in denial status. There's what's been overturned, and then there's what's been written off. What's important to do as rev cycle leaders is really think of that universe as a whole, instead of just focusing on one section or the other. So I've made this mistake in my past where I've only been focused on write-offs, or I've only been focused on initial and not the whole package. And I think you can really lose sight of the whole thing if you don't really focus on the journey rather than just one section.
Right. Yep. Excellent. Excellent. This has been just a great session. Really encourage everyone to go back and listen to this again. It's been a lot of insight for you. If you're not a current client of Infinix and using some of our solutions, I do encourage you to give us a call. We'll be happy to do a deeper dive with you, do some discovery with you, understand what your particular issues are and how we can actually solve those problems for you. And we can even do what's called an RCM health check. I mentioned this in the last session, but that's just a no-brainer to me to have an RCM health check done. And it's just that those analytics that Chuck was speaking about that could give you that picture into the state of your AR. And it is a launching pad on how you can utilize and leverage that information to make informed decisions going forward. Well, Chuck, I don't see any questions coming in. So with that.
I had one question, Stuart.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to know the official Stuart Newsom prediction. Are you for the Kansas City Taylor Swifts or the San Francisco 49ers?
Oh, boy. Yeah, neither team really floats my boat, but I will say that I'm pulling for the 49ers just because, not that I'm against the Taylor Swift or even against the Chiefs. I just have always had an affinity since I was a child. About one or two teams in the NFL that I really adored, and the 49ers was one of them. So I just got to go with my childhood loyalties.
I understand. Well, I'm in agreement with you here. I think the 49ers will pull it out, but I do think Taylor will show up. So
if there's
any betting to be done, I think that's going to be a big one for sure.
There's something to be said. It could be an evil genius plan that this was all just to get a different audience on to the Super Bowl. So
for sure.
All right. But with that, be happy for y'all to join us next time, next week, for Office Hours, another episode. And you also pick this up on the podcast. Thank you, Chuck, for joining me as well. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for joining us. Subscribe to get notified when our next episode is online. For more information for how we can help you increase reimbursements at your company, check out our website at infinix.com. That's infinx.com.